here we are back, hour number three. I've got to do something. Let me go over here real quick. And I'm going to look, do my little daily. I've done this twice already. I'm on the Fox News homepage. Yeah, I'm going to look. I'm going to count all the coronavirus stories. Yeah, I'm almost to the end of the page here. Doggone it, I'm down to the TNA section, and there wasn't one story about that coronavirus pandemic. Now, let me, just for fun, hold, I'm going to go to CNN here. Let's see. Yeah, there's Tony Fauci. U.S. should have a couple of hundred million doses of a COVID-19 vaccine by the start of 2021, says Tony. That was it. That was just a throwaway piece, a token. Oh, unreal. There you go. That's called news cycling. News cycling. And I'm sure all of you are well aware of it. Dr. Henry Nyman is back with us this evening, soon to be unemployed, I'm afraid, according to these two news sites I've just gone to, Henry. What are we going to do?
Well, the news sites aren't my primary source of information. not overly concerned. They're mostly zeroing in on the
protests.
They
are.
Right,
they
now
are mostly. Yes, and they are.
And
mostly.
And the protests, of course, are not socially distancing. So,
gosh, I noticed that. Funniest thing, yeah, when you high five somebody and you hoot and holler and cheer and yell and whoop it up, you know.
Yep. And the crowds get bigger every day. The number of cities grow every day. And yeah. They include some of the hot spots, and they include some of the up-and-coming hot spots. And the lockdowns are easing. So I don't think that the absence of COVID stories is going to, or reduction. There's a few that are out there still. But
well, here's a big one, though, Henry. We got to give credit where it's due. CNN has fourth story under Donald Trump, telling North Carolina that he's moving the convention. The fourth story under there is skateboarder Sky Brown, aged 11, hospitalized after horrific fall. The big story. I'm glad CNN is just all over things. Good, good. All right. Onward.
Well, I don't think Trump has a place yet. I think he's considering Tennessee, but he's looking for a guarantee that he can hold his convention in August. And I think he's in the wrong country. I don't think there's going to be any safe haven in the United States in August of 2020. So,
we got eight weeks to find out, or thereabouts.
He can do, you know, Kool-Aid spiked with hydroxychloroquine, but he's not going to get any. Don't worry about the virus, because the virus isn't going anywhere. And that's what I thought I'd talk about today, give a little bit of an update. There's still, even though virus was predicted to be gone in April, and it is now June, the U.S. still has 20,000 new cases every day. So we're still on the 20,000 a day pace. The number of deaths has gone down a little bit. We're in the 1,000 a day death rate. And it was 2,000. It had fallen to about 1,500. Now it's closer to 1,000. But it's it's a little tricky because it does bounce around a little bit. And but today he had a little over 1,000 cases and a little 1,000 deaths and a little over 20,000 cases. And the story that you had mentioned yesterday out of Germany, I had a chance to look at it. I just saw the English summary part. They actually had a link to the article itself, but it was in German, and it was very long. So I didn't try translating that. But essentially what that article was saying was that they didn't really have to have as extensive a lockdown in Germany because the pandemic really wasn't that bad. But they were really talking about Germany. And Germany did a good job on contact tracing. So countries in Europe that were affected, larger countries, Germany pretty much did the best as far as controlling the virus. So they had a lower number of cases based upon the contact tracing. And then the lockdown was pretty effective. So they're essentially writing an article saying that they did too good a job. They basically got these numbers down so low they really weren't that bad, so they probably didn't need to do what they did. Unfortunately, that type of logic and that type of analysis is rather common, or at least it, as far as infectious diseases are concerned. And I thought I'd give a quick refresher. Goes back a little bit, but it gives a better idea on how absurd some of the analysis is done by actually apparently scientists, but scientists with an agenda. So the scientists plus an agenda usually ends up with pure propaganda, which is kind of what that piece was. And there have been a lot of those similar pieces. Just as a reminder, one of the biggest propaganda stories out of Europe had to do with the spread of H5N1 by wild birds. And just as a quick refresher, this saga really began in 2005 with the Qinghai strain, which is Qinghai Lake is the largest lake in China. It's in central China. And in the spring of 2005, there was a big outbreak of H5N1 in wild birds. The species that was most affected were barheaded geese, but they affected quite a few different long-range waterfowl. And that raised significant concerns because these wild birds could fly over large distances, and there were known flyways, and the flyways predicted that the H5N1 that was in central China would end up going to Europe and the Middle East and eventually Africa. And there was concern about this particular strain because it seemed to be lethal in waterfowl, which was unusual. Usually waterfowls were pretty resistant to H5N1. And it actually had a change in the one of the polymerase genes that matched the change in human cases and allowed the virus to grow at temperatures, mammalian temperatures, as opposed to avian temperatures. And so that particular strain was concerning. And there was some resistance to the idea that wild birds could transport H5N1 out of China and And at that time, the H5N1 had been localized to China and Hong Kong. And it spread a little bit before that into Southeast Asia and a little bit into at least poultry into South Korea. So it's still an Asian issue. It's primarily a Chinese issue. But if the virus really was infecting wild birds and barheaded geese, you know, were capable of flying like 1,000 miles and 24 hours. And so they could move the virus a long distance. And the long distance, if they took that virus out in the fall, would bring it to Europe and the Middle East, where it had never been reported. It had never really been reported outside of China and adjacent countries to the east. So anyway, there were conservation groups that were concerned that if indeed the public thought that H5N1 was carried by wild birds, they would take extreme actions against wild birds and try to somehow eliminate them. And therefore, they were in complete denial that wild birds had anything to do with transport of H5N1. And they had two slogans. One was, "Dead birds don't fly," and the other was, "Wild birds as victim." And they essentially said, this is all a problem of commercial farms. Wild birds have nothing to do with it. They're victims. They occasionally get infected by the H5N1 in poultry. And so they're victims. And if they get infected, they die right away. So they really can't transport the virus over long distance. Okay. And it became pretty clear that they could. The initial outbreak was in May, and then the virus started to spread, and all of a sudden it was in Russia. It was in Siberia. Never been in Russia before. Same lineage, the Qinghai lineage, which was clade 2.2, started showing up in Russia in June or July, and that was an indication that it probably wasn't going to stay in China because it was already in Russia. And then it showed up in Mongolia. And some conservation groups went there, and this was a small lake, Irhel Lake, I think was the name. And the initial results came back that some of the dead birds there, wild birds, had H5. And they said, well, we don't know what this is. It's not H5N1 like the one at Qinghai Lake, because there really aren't enough dead birds. You know, there's some dead birds, but there aren't enough. And then came back, it was H5N1, and said, oh, well, it might be H5N1, but it's not this Qinghai strain, because, the mortality rate was much higher then. And then it came back that it was H5N1 high path, that it was the Qinghai strain. And so each time they made a statement trying to downplay it, they were proven wrong within 24 hours. So the virus had gotten up to Mongolia. And it was clear that even though it did kill waterfowl, it didn't kill all of them. And even if it did kill most of them, that wouldn't prevent the virus from spreading, because the virus doesn't have to stay with one bird going from point A to point B. And if one bird can fly 1,000 miles in one day and they can be asymptomatic for a couple of days, one bird can move the virus a very long distance, and then that virus can infect another bird in the flock, and the next bird can carry it another several thousand miles. So even if it was fatal in the wild birds, it wouldn't really prevent it from being spread by the wild birds. And that's exactly what happened. It was spread by the wild birds, and they started showing up at different locations where the birds would normally migrate, and They did
That's
go into Europe.
Flyways.
And they did go
flyways.
In the Middle East. Right, right. And they went. And then this whole cycle kept repeating. So the next year, it was the same thing. It was a slightly different version of the virus. You could tell what was going on by looking at the sequences. I've always said the stories in the sequences. And it was clear that the wild birds were carrying them and that there were slightly different versions, but the same thing happened. They showed up at the same locations and kind of faded away, you know, after the after they migrated down there. In the winter, you know, they were kind of fade. They were going to Africa, actually. And then the whole cycle would start over again the next spring. They would show up in Siberia and then travel. And a couple years after this whole cycle was ongoing, there were still people in Europe that said that H5N1 wasn't being transported by wild birds. It was being transported by trade, and that these outbreaks that showed up in Europe were due to shipping of poultry, and it was an absurd position because all of the birds had the same virus. They had the same Qinghai strain. There were several other clades. None of the other clades showed up in Europe or the Middle East or Africa. It was always the Qinghai clade. Eventually, the Fujian clade started coming, but that's because they got into wild birds. And but because they had this thing, it couldn't be the wild birds. The data was overwhelming. It was overwhelming in the summer of 2005, and they were still saying this in 2006, 2007, that it wasn't the wild birds. And they even had one guy that went around and collected with a pooper scooper, kind of scooping up samples to look for the Qinghai strain. And the Qinghai strain, like I said, changed the polymerase, so it grew better at lower temperatures. And it wasn't in the feces of the birds, because it was in their upper respiratory tract. So they would get all these negative feces and say, see, it's not in the wild birds. The wild birds don't have anything to do with it. So even when they had wild birds that were infected, they got the wrong results because they ran the wrong test. And they would publish these things as negative evidence. They looked at all these wild birds, and they did these cloacal swabs, and they looked at bird droppings, and there was no virus there. The birds didn't have anything to do with it. But that was one example of how the wild birds they maintained this for many years, saying that it had nothing to do with the wild birds. And it was just because that was the goal of their their experiments. They didn't bother checking the upper respiratory tract of the birds to see if it was there. And they just posted all this negative data and had agencies, FAO ended up, you know, doing the same thing. Oh, it had nothing to do with the wild birds. All it has to do with trade. But that's one example of how they take data and grossly misinterpret it. And then an even better, more relevant example is what happened with COVID. That when the outbreak happened in Wuhan, they had guys that did risk assessment. And they said, well, you know, this is circulating in China. There might be some limited human-to-human transmission.
Yeah, just
you know,
maybe.
If it does any spreading, it'll probably just spread in Asia, and the likelihood of any EU countries getting infected by this virus was extremely low. And then when they started exporting it, and exports started showing up in Asia, they said, well, you know, maybe it would come to the EU, but it might just hit one country, and it would be quickly contained, and it wouldn't spread. And as you and all most of your listeners know, those predictions weren't all that accurate, and they weren't accurate at all. And so they kind of totally blew the risk assessment. And so now that they are overrun with the virus, they come up with reports that say, well, the virus really isn't that bad. And, you know, it's kind of like the flu. You know, and they use Germany as the example and kind of ignore the other countries in Europe. Or the most glaring example is the United States, which is a country that wasn't near China at all. It was further from China than Europe is even. And they got overrun. And they got overrun because they were looking for the virus coming from China and didn't pay any attention to the virus coming from Europe. And so the virus came across the Atlantic. It came via, it didn't come by Europeans, it came by Americans that went to Europe, got infected, and brought the virus back. And because they didn't have any travel history in China, they weren't tested. You know, they said, oh, you don't meet the definition. And so there was no contact tracing, the virus spread, and it wasn't until March before they started really looking for virus in on the East Coast, and then found it and had these big outbreaks. Right. And I thought I would. I sent you a few examples of excessive deaths. Right.
Yeah.
And the excessive deaths are a way to basically make comparisons between COVID and the flu, for instance, and to see exactly what the death rate is from the virus by looking at simply looking at death records. And so, you know, these are collected. All countries do that. I use the data from the CDC, which looked at the data for various states in the U.S. They basically had an interactive table. You could call up each of the states. You could also do New York City. And I sent over the data from some of the more affected regions. I did one for New York City, one for New York State, excluding New York City, one from Massachusetts, one from Illinois. And all of them had pretty good size outbreaks. And and it's very easy to go through those graphs to get an idea what was going on in the United States, because essentially the way this works is there's no, you know, determination, oh, was this caused by COVID, or was it caused by COVID, or why did they die, or da-da-da-da. All they want to know is, are they dead? Is there a death certificate? And if they died, where did they die? Where were they living when they died? And then they just tally that. So there's just a basic record, how many people died on what date in one location. And you know, as some of your listeners probably know, that in science, pretty much everything's defined by just time and space. You just need those two components, and that defines everything. So they want to know where were they, what was the space, and when did they die? And then they put that together, and they know that flu does affect those death rates. And they know what historical records are. And so for the United States, they know it kind of peaks in the winter and around the beginning of the year, the calendar year. There's a peak and then it goes down, and sometimes there's a second serotype. It's usually influenza B follows influenza A, and there could be another little bit of bump. And then it kind of fades and goes down lower over the summer, and then the next fall the cycle repeats and it starts to go up, corresponding with the flu season.
Right.
And so I had some of the charts to give an idea on what those numbers look like. And I'm looking at the New York one. So just for the New York State alone, the data goes back to 2017, and then they've got a line above the tops of the bars for each date, each week. And if it crosses the bar, then it is in the excessive death category. So for the state of New York, excluding the city of New York, since 2017 up until about 2 months ago, it had broken that line three times. They all three happened right around the beginning of the year in 2018. The 2017-18 flu season was a particularly bad flu season. And so you can see that for New York, two of the weeks, it kind of touched that that line. So it's got a little plus over that date. And then one week, it actually broke that line. And it broke it by a very small amount. So that gives you an idea. In New York, anyway, since 2017, each year there's a new flu season. And you can see that it only got to the excessive death levels on 3 weeks, and that was in the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. And then things dramatically changed when you got to April of this year. In April of this year, I think it started the week ending the middle of April. Every week since then, New York has had excessive deaths. And they are very excessive deaths. You know, nothing compared to what it looks like for the flu. And it peaked still in April. And it's a very dramatic peak. So if they click on those stories, it'll take you to the thread for New York excessive deaths. And you can actually see each week it's got a link to the CDC site. So you can kind of go to the site and hover over the results and see what it actually looks like. For each of the weeks and get those numbers. Let me see, for New York, let me just pull this up here, just to give you an idea. For the state of New York, it ended up on its peak week. It normally would have 56,000 deaths in that week. The threshold for excessive death was 58,000, and they actually had 77,000. So they had almost 20,000 deaths in just that 1 week for just the state of New York. And the next day, the next week, it really isn't all that different. Expected 55,000, the peak is 57, and they had 74,000 deaths. And just as a comparison, if you look at the flu season, you look at the highest week, they would have 59,600, what they expected. The threshold is 61,000, and they had 67,000. So they had 6,000 in that 1 week where they actually went a little bit over that. And hold on, I'm taking a look. The numbers I gave you.
Let me ask you a question. What about statistics now? We're not getting a lot. There's just no noise, no press, no nothing about this pandemic. All of a sudden, it's gone. It's just gone from the news. It's not gone from reality, but it's just gone. So where are people supposed to get their statistics and their knowledge and wisdom about what to do about this if not here? They're not getting it. I don't see any releases from any governments, state governments, city, county, local. I just don't see anything. I'm sure there are some, but I'm not seeing any. Nothing.
Now, each state, basically, for COVID, they've got a COVID page, and they basically give data, and they update the data on a daily basis, although they can get a little bit flaky over the weekend. And you can get a lot of information on your state, and you can, there's interactive maps there, and you can, they're even broken, a lot of them even break it down by zip code. You can see how many cases there were in each zip code. You can see how many hospitalizations there are and how many cases there are. So you can get those numbers. I've been keeping a running tally, so I've got them listed by states, and I've got each day's data there, and you can see the number of cases and the number of deaths, and I've been tallying those, and that's why I said today there were a little over 1,000 deaths in the U.S., and there were a little over 20,000 cases. Several of the cable outlets used to have a tally up there, and in the last week, it's kind of given way to the protests. So the protests are basically taking most of the news, and they're not really putting the scores up. They had the scores up that you could see them, you know, totals for the top five states on how many cases there were and how many cases and how many deaths. And so all of that data is available. You can go to the state website, and they do update it every day. And so that's why I'm saying if you go through and add them all up, which is what I've been doing, it's taking more time than I care to admit. I can get a tally for each day. And the numbers have been remarkably consistent. That it's been in the 20,000 a day range for a couple of months now. And so it hasn't changed a whole lot. When things were peaking, it was getting closer to 25,000 to 30,000. Mm-hmm. But
that's right.
Before that peak, it was in the 20,000 range. And it's been in the 20,000 range, even though we're into June now. So this is the reason. If you look at that data, and, I just went over sets of data, but I put up three or four different states. I'll probably add a few more, or you can just follow the link and do your own. And those excessive deaths, if you run through all the states, you can see that some of the states, it's very dramatic as mm-hmm. far as how many extra deaths there were. And other states, it's not that dramatic. They've had cases, and it would look like a bad flu season, but it doesn't look like kind of these disasters I read for New York or Boston or Philadelphia or Chicago or
New
Orleans.
What are we going to expect here in the next few weeks? A lot of rioters coming down sick? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're going to get, it's hard to say. The number of people that are actually marching is still a relatively small percentage.
No, it's
of
not
the
millions, no.
Population. Yeah. And so those numbers, there might be some stories that they focus on some individuals and people say, they went. And 2 weeks ago, they were out marching, and now they got symptoms. But the numbers are going to go up because the lockdowns are being lifted. And so that's going to cause the numbers to start going up. And like I was saying about Europe, the reason Germany has such a low number because they got exposed to the Italian strain that swept through Europe. But they kept their numbers more under control because they were very aggressive on the contact tracing. The contact tracing, you know, limits the spread, and then once that gets out of control and there's too many to trace, then it depends how effective the lockdown is. The virus needs to go and find a new host. If the lockdown's effective and they aren't able to, then, you know, the spread isn't that dramatic. And the reason this is just a herald wave, and the reason this is going to be eclipsed pretty dramatically in the fall is because the virus is just dumps its species, and it's just kind of getting around from location to location. And, you know, people taking precautions has kind of slowed the spread somewhat. And but the virus is very persistent.
All right. Okay. Now, another question. Do viruses invariably or virtually invariably become more virulent as they work into the populace? Now, we've seen that with the Italian strain, understood. But over a year, over 6 months, what do viruses, what, like SARS? It's still around, I guess, if it is. I don't know.
No, it isn't. It isn't.
It's gone. So could this virus do the same thing?
SARS is gone. No.
Could this do the same thing? Why not?
No. Did you ever hear about the SARS pandemic?
What do you mean? Of course, you were here.
No, that
it wasn't
an epidemic.
Pandemic, though. It was an epidemic.
Right. There was no pandemic. Did you ever hear about a MERS pandemic?
No, I heard about those camels.
Either did I.
Trouble. But seriously, are they both gone now, do we think?
It is serious. You can't compare an epidemic to a pandemic. They're two totally different.
Well, I'm just comparing viruses to viruses.
No, you aren't. You're comparing two epidemics to a pandemic and saying, why isn't the pandemic going to be the same as the two epidemics? It's because
let me rephrase the question. Okay.
I heard your question loud and clear. MERS is an epidemic. It's an epidemic.
Got it. But it's still a virus.
Can't spread very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are millions of viruses. An epidemic describes the behavior of the virus. An epidemic is a virus that spreads locally. It doesn't become a pandemic because it isn't that efficient at spreading. Epidemics come and go because, by definition, a virus that is the cause of an epidemic is not capable of causing a pandemic.
So the SARS version 1.0
was... So you are comparing two epidemics to a pandemic and asking why won't the pandemic behave like an epidemic? And it's because it's not an epidemic, it's a pandemic. It's already shown that it has the ability to travel to 215 countries.
Right.
It's already shown that there are 20, I mean, here, this is simple math. In the United States, there are 20,000 cases per day in the summer, or at least in June.
Close
20,000. Okay. In the U.S., for the SARS pandemic, epidemic. You got me doing it. For the SARS epidemic.
Which was in Toronto, primarily.
It came over in Toronto. Right. But there were cases in the U.S.
Yes.
There were about a dozen. okay? There were 12 cases in the U.S. Maybe there were 20. It was...
I remember.
You can count them on your shoes and tail and
hands
fingers
and
toes.
Unless you're defective and you might not be able to.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's in that ballpark. It was less than 20. It was less than two dozen anyway. That's how many were in the U.S. There were more in Canada, primarily because of the outbreak in Toronto. So the Toronto, it actually were two outbreaks in Toronto when they got it under control, and then it kind of came back. It was still the same virus. It was still in Toronto, but it looked like it was under control, and then it wasn't, and then it got back under control. So Toronto's a good example. They did contact tracing. They knew exactly where it started. They knew exactly when it started. They knew how it spread. They tracked down those that were infected. They got them into quarantine. They stopped the transmission spread. And it went away. After 2003, there weren't any cases in Canada. There weren't any cases in the United States. Many countries had zero cases because it wasn't a pandemic. It was an epidemic.
Where did the virus go? The SARS-1.
It went in the reservoir in Bass. There's no place. If it doesn't have a host, it goes away.
It's no longer in people at all. That's what you're saying. It went back to bats or wherever it came from.
Right.
I got
right.
you. And it's, the same with MERS. Asia. It went back to camels.
It's in Asia.
Or wherever it came from. Yeah.
So those were epidemics. They didn't go anywhere. They caused a local outbreak. They in this case, there were some efforts for the larger ones to control it, and those control efforts were successful. And so, if the virus doesn't have a host, it goes. It can't grow without having a host and using the machinery of the cell. The viruses are very simple. They've only got a limited number of genes. Most of the genetic information is designed just to copy their genetic information. And they get into a cell, and the cell's machinery goes and takes the RNA and turns it into proteins, and the proteins get assembled to make a new virus, and it replicates that way. And pretty soon, the virus is eliminated by the host. And if that virus doesn't get another person to go to, it dead ends. That particular virus no longer exists.
And I was only asking because this current virus is called SARS-2. What is it called?
Correct.
SARS. All right, and I figured it was that close.
It's SARS-CoV-2.
That's it, yeah.
And it's got a reservoir of bats in China and Southeast Asia. So that particular version, the SARS version, that's its natural reservoir. And there's some anteaters, you know, scaled anteaters that seem to have them. That might be another reservoir. But that's where the virus is, and that's where the virus was before it jumped into humans late last year. So late last year, it got into humans. It jumped species. So it basically had enough changes.
Right through that, I can't resist. Jump right through the Wuhan biolab into people. Because they were experimenting with it. That's what we're told, anyway.
Yeah, and so far nobody's come up with the sequence in the lab. But That's true. That's what some people... I mean, if you had the sequence in the lab, you'd have a strong case. if you
the
if
Bat
you
Lady.
Have,
did Henry meet the Bat so-called Bat Woman over there? Did you know her?
No, I didn't meet her. But but the point, I mean, like I said, the story's in the sequence, and you know,
sequences can't lie. I got it.
It was pretty clear when this first sequence was released that it was closely related to the SARS-CoV-1. It wasn't, it was 70%. I mean, but it was closer to that than anything else. So it was that category. It was a coronavirus. It was a beta coronavirus, and it was closer to the SARS than it was to MERS, for instance, which is also a beta coronavirus. So it was close to that, but it wasn't so close that it came from that one. It was closer to a virus that was in the lab. The Wuhan virus was isolated in 2003, and it was like 96%. So that was close enough to say, you know, it probably came from bats in China, but it wasn't close enough to say it came from that lab. The 4% difference is still a significant difference. Mm-hmm. And then other labs came up with them that weren't in Wuhan. There were labs that were in China, but in different locations in China, who also studied bats or bat coronaviruses. They studied coronaviruses, but they came from bats. They actually went to a different cave. It was also in southern China. It was on the border with Thailand, but it was, you know, 100 miles or so, or 200 miles away from where the other one came from. And it was in a different species of bat, but it was in a Malaysian species. They were both horseshoe bats. And it was even closer. So that one hadn't been in Wuhan as far as the lab is concerned. It was I can't remember where the lab was, but the lab was not in Wuhan. But and the cave was not the same cave that the one that was 96%. This one was 97%. And so it's hard to say how it got there. I mean, there was a linkage to a wet market, and it's possible that it never had anything to do with the lab. It happened to, I mean, they actually sold bats at the bat meat. You know, you could buy a bat or eat a bat at that market, and one of them could have been infected with these coronavirus, which natural reservoirs of bats. Somebody got infected in Wuhan, and they infected other people in that market, and that's where most of the cases were. But that doesn't mean that they exclusively came from that market at that time when the cluster came. They could have come from some other market in the area, and it expanded in that one. So exactly where it came from, that's something certainly worth investigating. It would be good to know, but to say anything with any conviction, you need a match. You need a match better than 96% or 97%. Since you got 96 from one lab and 97 from another lab, neither of them are 99-something. And there was another lab that was, I don't know, around 90%. So there are three different labs in China, all of which work on coronaviruses from bats, and they all have a sample that's more than 90%, but none of them are more than 97%. And so there's no good argument that it came from any one or the other. If you had one that was 99%, then you'd have a much better argument. So that hasn't been identified yet.
Okay, real quick, we're June the 2nd. If this is going to prevail through the summer like we forecasted, we're going to see, let's say in 4 weeks from now, we should be seeing, what, how many, 15,000 cases a day? It should hold fairly stable. We should plateau, right? Somewhere? That's a best guess.
I think it's going to start going up. It's at 20,000 now. Uh-huh. I think the number of cases will rise because the restrictions are already being lifted.
You still there? Whoop. Henry, I can't hear you. All right. Henry Nyman will be back tomorrow night. We will be with you tomorrow in 21 hours. And let's see, who's on tomorrow? William Geen. Henry, if you're there, thank you. He was there. William Geen tomorrow night. And William is loaded for bear, believe me. You know there were elections today? In Pennsylvania? I forget where else. Several elections. Haven't seen a word about that either. Isn't it amazing how the programming works? Everything else is just gone. See you tomorrow. Take care.